Field preparation. Frontline Fellowship has, from the very beginning, 39 years ago, been a field-oriented mission. In fact, we were going for several years before we even got an office. And we were going from 1982, cross-border missions, and only in 1989 did we actually get ourselves an office. Our vision is Africa for Christ. Now, as we seek to put feet to our faith, boots on the ground, what does it take to be a missionary? First and foremost, it takes education and reading. To overcome the language gaps, the cultural gaps, the religious gaps, the prospective missionary needs to be trained in language acquisition. He needs an adequate grasp of anthropology and sociology to understand the people to whom he or she is sent and to avoid unnecessarily offending them. Such as in the East, how important it is that your right hand is your clean hand, your left hand is your dirty hand, you don't eat with your left hand, you don't accept gifts with the left hand, you know, the right hand is a clean hand, things like that. Even more importantly, we need to understand the religious worldview of the people we call to evangelize, whether they're animist, Hindu, Buddhist, Islam, humanist, atheist, and so on. Most importantly of all, a missionary must be well taught in the Bible, in doctrine, in theology, in the principles and practices of missions. It is often necessary to learn other practical skills. Agriculture, bricklaying, carpentry, printing, mechanics, medicine, these are essentials in the field, and these days you can add IT and a whole lot of others too, because a lot of missions involves a lot of practical work. And so you cannot have this attitude of, oh, well, you know, I'm only called to the spiritual work. Well, body, mind, and spirit all works together. Bodies and souls are more or less firmly connected. And so knowing how to have your equipment work, how to fix mechanical problems, to do mechanical first aid, as we call it, all of that's important. But secondly, we need spiritual preparation, personal discipline of devotions and Bible study and prayer, and to be self-disciplined in our use of our time and our money and our equipment and our opportunities, if we don't waste or squander opportunities or damage equipment through lack of thoughtfulness. And that is why a lot of the GCC is trying to get people to think, clean up after one another, be punctual, be respectful of property and of one another, and not to leave things out to get stale, to get flies in it, to get damaged in the rain and all the rest. We've got to know how to make the most of what we've been entrusted with. And this means a humble and teachable attitude. Then there's the physical preparation. Many of the mission fields in the world, especially in the 1040 window, have harsh terrains, hot climates, in many cases primitive conditions, and this requires healthy and fit missionaries who can endure and be effective in adverse circumstances, who can cope with and recover from debilitating illnesses. The healthier you are, the fitter you are, the quicker you'll recover. I mean, you can't say you're not going to get sick. You will get sick. We all get sick in the field at some stage, but it's how well we can recover and cope with it. Some people can be absolutely knocked out of the running with just a minor illness, and other people can keep going and be resilient even with quite a lot. And as my wife often says, she can't believe what babies so many men become when they get sick. You can get a little bit of flu and suddenly they act like they're absolutely incapable and become rude and bad-tempered. And oh my, shameful. You know, you think women put up with things like childbirth and all this, and then you get these men who are meant to be so strong and tough, and they wimps over just a minor bit of illness, which is not that serious. And so we've got to get over that. Getting sick isn't a big problem. We can get over it. Ministry experience. It's essential for all missionaries to have extensive ministry experience at home before venturing into cross-cultural missions overseas. It's extraordinary how many people have never done anything at home. They want to go overseas missions. Why? If it doesn't work at home, don't export it. And so if you won't be missed at home, if your church won't really feel the gap, then you're not ready for the field. And so it's so important that people have been involved in Sunday school teaching and youth group ministry and administration, maybe a local mission organization, that they've been involved in street evangelism, radio ministry, literature ministry, door-to-door ministry to poor, needy, film evangelism, Muslim evangelism, and so much more. And there's no more excuse for anyone to say, oh, well, there are no Muslims in our area. There's not many places in the world where you don't find some Muslims that you can practice on, so to speak, and be involved in ministry these days. Fifthly, you need adaptability. The field will not adapt to you. You need to be flexible and versatile to make the best of even the worst situation. Rigid and brittle people will be most frustrated in the field. You must be open to advice, must be open to correction, must be open to rebuke, especially from the local Christians who do tend to come to us and point out if we're open where we are doing things wrong or how we could do it better and so on. And we must be adaptable. We can't say, well, this is the way it's got to be. No. In fact, apparently, some of the most inflexible missionaries on the planet are the South Koreans. There's a Korean way of doing it, and there's the wrong way. And they are convinced that there's only one. And they are very, very rigid, generally speaking. And so one has to be careful to be willing to adapt to the different cultures, field situations we challenge. Sixthly, a missionary needs perseverance. Obstacles abound. Frustrations, disappointments, discouragements are just occupational hazards. And they're part of a job description. What's a mission without obstacles and disappointments, discouragements, danger, difficulties? Missionaries need endurance, faspate, need ability to just keep on keeping on. A willingness to suffer hardship, a capacity to suffer hardship and discomfort and opposition and worse. Sacrificial service, remember, is more eloquent than many sermons. And then there's the need for emotional stability. This is important. Those who are easily upset by irritations or loss of sleep, unfair treatment, those moody and easily discouraged or depressed are not suitable for missions. Missionaries must be emotionally stable, self-disciplined, not needing to be prodded and supervised by a whole regiment of rules in order to function. Honestly, people like that don't belong in missions. They should go and work for the government or something. Because the need for emotional stability is vital. What you have in the field is roosters crowing from 2 a.m, all kinds of things, machine guns going off in the middle of the night close to where you're sleeping, all kinds of hazards, bombings, whatever. And I have seen people go off the rails, completely lose it, and become more than a disaster and a liability to a ministry. And there have been people we've had to kick out of the field and ship out because they are a danger to themselves and the people around them. And it's a problem. And you get some people who, the moment there's something goes wrong, and of course what they do, they turn their hostility and anger on the mission leader, the local Christians, and whatever else, because somehow we're to blame for the Arabs having bombed us or whatever, and so on and so forth. Number 8, the ability to work with other people. In the mission field, relationship difficulties are aggravated. When people are enough of a problem right there, you don't need anything else. But in the field, you'll have high levels of stress because it'll be hotter or, in some place, colder. There'll be cross-cultural confusion and frustration. And the closeness of living and traveling and working conditions intensifies interpersonal conflicts. And missionaries tend to be strong-willed people. In fact, any effective missionary will be a strong-willed person, because strong-willed people are necessary to survive in the field, and therefore potential clashes will undermine the mission team and the projects if you're not careful. It's inevitable. You put people in a crammed-up condition, you cram a whole lot of people into limited space in the vehicle, and you're driving 12, 14 hours a day. It can take 12, 14 days to get up to Sudan, for example, driving from Cape Town, 8,000 k's on the road, increasingly worse roads, more and more potholes, gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then you've got border difficulties, frustrations, customs problems. That's not even talking about now this COVID insanity, lockdown lunacy, extra paperwork, tests, and who knows what else. And then you get these government officials who doctor no, whatever it is, they start shaking their head. In Eastern Europe, it was nous apporter. It cannot be done. I mean, that's the first thing any socialist, Marxist imbecile would start cannot be done. Nusupate. Now, the attitude in the West is, we can make a plan. But the attitude of a socialist bureaucrat who works for the government is always, not possible, can't be done. You haven't even finished your question yet. And they start shaking their head, and they start muttering their equivalent of what we heard in Romania how many times, Nusupate. Cannot be done. And so, how are you going to manage to work with the local people and with the government officials if you can't even work with your team members? There are dependent people who need constant support and direction. They sap the energy from the team. Some people describe them like leeches. I mean, there are some people who are just emotional drains. They're like a ball and chain around your neck. Forget about your ankle. And they suffocate. That's why it's so important, as the scriptures, not to lay hands suddenly on anyone, not to quickly give new converts responsibilities. There are some people who are nothing but a curse on the team because they're self-centered, they're full of all kinds of emotional baggage. They come in there and they've got a problem with everyone and they need endless counseling. Now, you don't have time for this. The mission exists for the advancing of the kingdom of God, and we're going in there to serve the local church, to reach this unreached people group, whatever our call is. We're not there to provide counseling to this basket case who needs endless amounts of affirmation and sorry that your feathers were ruffled and you took it the wrong way. We can't be like that. We can't take offense at everything. And whether it's with the team members or the hosts or the local people or whoever we're dealing with. So you get dependent people who sap the energy and the life out of everyone so that you feel drained at the end. And then there's independent people who, like the Lone Ranger and Rambo, they're out there doing their own thing. They don't care what the rest of the team's doing. You're waiting for them. Who knows where they are? They're off on their own mission. You're delayed because of all this. And so you get these independent people who are pulling and yanking and getting you off track. And, of course, they are a problem as well. And they waste time and they divert. In fact, I've had to leave people behind in the field because they were just off doing their own mission and they weren't where they were meant to be at the right time. It's like, tough, find your own way home. Then there's missionaries who are interdependent. That's what we must be, team players. Have you noticed how in World Cup soccer, you can have good soccer players, but that doesn't win the World Cup. You've got to have a good team. And it's been pointed out that Africa has never produced a team, a national team, that wins the World Cup because they have great soccer players, but they don't have good teams. Because they want to be the one who scores the goal and things like this. It doesn't work like that. You see how the German team works, you know, blitzkrieg through there, or the Spanish team, how they work together, and they pass so fast. Nobody has the ball for more than a second. And they just moving through. It doesn't matter who scores the goal. It's the team. And so this idea of the continual, the moment they've got it, and it's very hard, as you just saw, for example, in 2014, how this German team went through just blitzkrieg the whole lot, and the Brazilians were wiped out. Because it didn't matter how many good players there were on the Brazil team, their team didn't work together as well as their opponents. Now, that's the key thing. You've got a lot of people who, they've got skill, they've got abilities. But if you're not working as a team, you're just breaking it all down. And so we've got to be willing to be self-starters. In other words, we get out of bed on our own. We don't need someone to chase us up. Self-reliant and self-sacrificing. We'll work together, relinquishing our own interests for the good of the team. That's a team player. That's what we need. And of course, ninthly, you need enthusiasm for the gospel. While knowledge of the gospel and the ability to communicate the gospel can be taught and it can be learned, a zeal for sharing the gospel is from the heart. A Christ-like life, a spirit-filled life, is evidenced by the fruit of the Spirit and a boldness in proclaiming God's word. We read in Acts over and over, they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and they went out and proclaimed the word of God with boldness. And that's what we need. We need that enthusiasm for the gospel. That's critical. So those are 9 essentials for the mission field. Now, here's 9 ways of going. Number one, everyday witness. This is the largest group. All people in a church should be involved in outreach and service in their own locality. The whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. That's the ideal. That's what it should be. So the pastor's first job is to train his congregation, the whole congregation, to be everyday witnesses. This is the vision of Evangelism Explosion, for example. As well as supporting and encouraging others to go into other areas and situations. So everyday witness, that's one way. In their different work and callings and vocations, people are witnessing on a daily basis. That's what the church should be. Number two, you can get tent makers. They can also be called passport missionaries or professional skills, which gives them a passport to countries and situations where Christian workers may be restricted or where full-time cross-cultural witnesses are restricted. The other night we had here the Swartzes, Bernard and Irene. They went to Sudan, to Khartoum, where you couldn't be a missionary. All missionaries are banned from 1964. There's no way you could get in there as a missionary. They got in there as educationists, teaching English medium school, international school, and so on. And so the people who have a occupation, many people are teaching English second language in China and Saudi Arabia and all of that, and they're able to use that as their platform in order to do ministry as well. Tent makers use their secular employment as a means of mission in restricted access countries. Now here's up in Petiorca, this doctor's from the British Isles, and he's a retired doctor, and so he donated many months of his time to come out each year and to give of his time and service at the local hospital. The local hospital in Eastern Province of Zambia, it had a 280-bed hospital and not one qualified doctor. Now, masses of people in Eastern Province had qualified as doctors, but they didn't want to return to Eastern Province, either stayed in the SAC or in Canada, Australia, South Africa, wherever they got their training. And so there's a lot of people who go out for training and never return. And so this doctor, I think he's from Scotland, came in and he didn't even need to build a hospital, bring in medicines, because the government hospitals were there. The beds were there, the nurses were there, staff were there. The budget was there. The catering department, the pharmacy, it was all there. But they needed a qualified physician to be able to prescribe the medicines and to make it all work and do the surgeries and procedures. And so you can, if you've got the skills, you can sometimes go straight into even a government situation and they were even paying him a salary to come there to work in the hospital. And so all he had to do was get himself out there transport-wise. And there's opportunities like that all over the world for tent makers. We call them tent makers after the Apostle Paul, who also made tents and mended tents on the course of his work to fund his way on his early missions. Now, I, in my early time of doing this work to get the funds and the money for boots and motorbike and backpack and sleeping bag and all the rest of it, I was working the fire brigade, and that funded me through Theological College and enabled me to, by the time I graduated, have everything I needed, not just settle my student debt, but that I had a bike and boots and backpack and everything else I needed, plus enough money to get the Jesus film and head off to the field, and a 16mm projector too. By the way, back in 1985, after I graduated from Baptist Theological Seminary, it cost me 600 rand to buy a 16mm projector. 600 rand. But four reels of the Jesus film for one Jesus film in Portuguese, that cost 650 rand. So one film cost more than the projector. Isn't it interesting how videos and DVDs have changed the whole equilibrium there? And the motorbike, my first motorbike I bought, that cost 1,000 rand. 250 off-road motorbike. Still, tent making. Number three, you get missionary partners. The traditional missionary, working with churches which are officially recognized by denominations and governments, and so that's a lot of what work we do. We often come in as partners alongside established churches and help them to be more effective by providing them with the Bibles, with the training, with the evangelistic equipment, and we will come in with guest speakers and assist them with their colleges and other projects. Then you get veterans like Reverend Bill Batham, people who've served in another culture, moved to a third culture, returned to their own culture, but continue to use their skills and experience. But these are not necessarily people who are old. They can be in their 40s, 30s, even 20s, may have a lot of experience. But Bill Batham ministered in 114 countries of the world. 67 years, mostly behind the Iron Curtain to communist countries. Think of Small Paul. I think he celebrated his 70th birthday a while back. And he's still out there in the field dedicated. He's been in South Africa this year, 20 years, focused, and they're going all the way up to the equator, ministering all the way up to Kenya and so on, and drawing people to Christ, literally. So we can continue to go into areas, missionary veterans helping churches, training teachers. And then there's missionary apprentices, people who go for a shorter period of time to another culture to contribute, but also to learn, so as to be more effective in their own culture or another. Then sixthly, you get underground witnesses, people who are living and working in situations where any expression of faith is suppressed. Then there's international students who use their time of training to get alongside other students for evangelism and discipleship, and also to prepare themselves for further mission responsibilities. And so student ministry is a wonderful opportunity. And you've heard the testimony of how Muslim students going to study overseas in America, even Phoenix, being invited to homes, hospitality ministry, people who specialize in trying to reach out to students. And you can reach people from restricted access areas, from closed countries even, where the gospel is illegal, and win them to Christ in a student ministry opportunity. So there's a lot of international students all around, even in Cape Town, that one can reach. Then you get short-termers, people who dedicate them, whether it's a holiday or a short period of time, it might be a few weeks, a few months, or a few years, but they lend a hand and they also receive on-the-spot orientation, again with a view to further involvement in missions at a later stage. Every mission needs short-termers. Now, short-termers who go out from a church to do their own project in the area without regard to what's going on in that local area might do more harm than good. But short-termers who go in to help establish pastors, missionaries, colleges, they can be invaluable in every way. So now we get to field preparation, practical hands on the ground. Now what do we see in this picture? Well, you can see gospel recordings or Bible media, backpacks, waterproof backpacks, which have got the tape recorders, these man the box who speaks my language that you can see in the glass cabin over there, hand cranked or solar power panel powered so that it doesn't need electricity, with the flip charts, 9 hours of Bible teaching tapes going all the way from Genesis to the book of Acts. We've got VCD recorders. You see some of those in the cabinets here as well. The battery packs, we've got the video projectors, we've got the Bible packs of the man in the box who speaks my language, some of the flip charts, you can see the tape recorder there. Different school textbooks of our books and materials that we see each of World Missionary Press gospel booklets, of course. In fact, the roof rack is completely solid. Normally the roof rack is full of World Missionary Press gospel booklets. Waterproofed, of course. Yes, roof racks can get saturated in the rain. Before we even get on the roads, which might be more pothole than road, or it might be more like a track, but before we get onto the road, there has to be spiritual preparation. First and foremost, how are we prepared? Our heart, our soul, our devotional life, our relationship with the Lord, peace with God. You want to be sure you're right with God, because remember, you don't want to take anything to the field that you're not willing to lose. That includes your own life. So if you're not willing to die in the field, and bear in mind, it doesn't have to be as dramatic as a bombing or a landmine. It is generally car accidents. There have been vastly more missionaries who have died of vehicle accidents traveling in the field than from diseases, snakes, lions, crocodiles, hippos, and all this, or even diseases combined. So traveling by vehicle long distance is actually one of the most dangerous things you can do. You just need to bear that in mind. Then there's mental preparation. Spiritual preparation is one of the preparations. Mental preparation is another. And of course, we are doing that with exams and with assignments and lectures here too. But then there's also the emotional preparation. Be expected to be deflated in the field. Before the tire hits the road, there are potholes, both physical and spiritual, and there are dangers on the road. When you start to see these kind of triangular signs on the road, you sort of wonder, what is around the corner? And then you get these ones, which is, oh, notice, that is a danger sign, the triangle point upwards. This is a yield sign, I guess I would yield to minds. Okay. Minds have rights of way, so to speak. So fair enough. That picture he took in Sudan. The roads can be pretty daunting. And so you need emotional preparation for inevitable crisis. But look at these examples of resilience. These are local people who haven't used the, I don't have a truck, I don't have petrol, or whatever. No, they're using their bicycle. And look at the amount of weight this man's putting on. And just the resilience of people who just decide they make a plan. And this is just excellent. When a person can do this kind of balancing act, this kind of how to move things, all you got is a bicycle. Well, how do you move a desk with just a bicycle? Well, you make a plan. And there's so much resilience to see on the road, which just shows you we don't have an excuse. In fact, I heard somebody say some time ago, if you can't afford a four-wheel drive vehicle, you can't go into missions. First question I asked was, so how did the Apostle Paul manage? And, you know, honestly and truly, it's just extraordinary how many people think you need this or that equipment. In fact, you don't need much. When I had no money, no vehicle, no anything, I did hitchhiking. I hitchhiked 140,000 kilometers in the field and did a lot of my early missions without so much as what I could carry on my back, an 80-liter backpack, and that was it. And there's a lot you can do even with nothing more than the boots on your feet. Sometimes we didn't even have boots. And these people here should be a rebuke to those who use excuses. I can't reach the field because. Yes, you can, if you need. In fact, I've come across people months late for college to turn up at their Bible course because they didn't have bus fare or train fare. You know, in that time, they could have walked there. Really and truly. David Livingstone proved that. You can walk anywhere in Africa. So, when some people have asked me the question, how far is it? Is it in walking distance? And my normal response is, yes. Everywhere in Africa is in walking distance. David Livingstone proved that. I mean, the question is, do you have the time? But everywhere is in walking distance. And if you start early enough, you can get there. So this idea that I've got to have a car or a plane ticket or this kind of money or airtime or this. Look, the equipment's nice, but it's not essential. And when you can see what the average woman do in Africa, do you know most of the women in Africa spend most of their time chopping wood, carrying wood, collecting water, carrying water. Most of them spend most of the time doing that. Now just think of that and think of how much time we have saved with electricity and plumbing and vehicles and all the rest of it. We don't have excuses, really. There's so much resilience that you can see in the field, and it's a rebuke to people who stay at home with excuses. Of course, physical preparation is important, and that's why we emphasize push-ups, upper body strength, being willing to get muddy and dirty, reaching, stretching, overcoming obstacles, being willing to get in the dirt and damp and all the rest of it. It's all part of getting to the summit, getting to the top, overcoming obstacles. You don't get to the top of any mountain in one jump or step. It takes thousands of steps, tens of thousands of steps, actually. And that's been tracked by Kelvin's step-o-meter that he wears on his wrist. That's one of our hikes up Table Mountain. Apparently, it was 38,000 steps up and down. So there we go. And that's analogous to discipleship. It takes many steps, many, many, many steps, and many forks in the road that we need to go down. Of course, some basic documents you need. Believe it or not, there are people who forget their passports when they go to the field. And we have had to even leave individuals at the border because they either didn't have a passport or their passport was expired or the passport would have expired before they came back in or they didn't have enough clear pages in their passports for the passport stamps in, so that they were left at the border post and had to find their own way home while the rest of the team continued. If you don't have your papers in order, you can be in trouble and could be a liability to the team. So being sure we got our documents right, whether it's as the passports, the visas, the inoculations, whatever's required, all the way through to driver's license. And carnet de passagers for vehicles, you need papers for vehicles. And then in many countries, you must take out a third-party insurance when you're in the country. In other words, if you have an accident, that it'll cover the cost of the damage you might do to somebody or something else. And so these are different documents one needs to get ahead. So I've always been a member of the Automobile Association, the AA. I found it very useful. They give advice, they give information, they help with the documentation. And so I think for any missionary who's traveling cross-border, an Automobile Association membership is a good investment. Not to mention the amount of times we've been broken down the side of the road when the AA has been able to help us when we've needed towing or something beyond our own ability. So that includes the vehicle documents. You need vehicle documents, and if it's not your vehicle and you're using someone else's vehicle, the mission vehicle, you need letters of permission and all of that sort of thing stamped by the police. These are part of basic problems. You don't want to get to the border post only to be told, sorry, you've got to go 1,800 k's back to Cape Town to go and get this, that, and the other. You know, really. Not that that sort of thing hasn't happened. We had a testimony at our devotions a few months ago of some poor Zambian who took how many months was it to get his literature? He is bringing a truck down here to collect 28 tons of literature from Literature Path and go back. Oh my, the tortures, the amount of time he got to the border, had to go back to Lusaka, back and forth and so on and so forth. It was trauma, but it was not days, not weeks, it was months. It took him months to get from Lusaka down to Cape Town and back to Lusaka again. Months. Absolutely staggering. And paperwork, unfortunately, was a major part of the problem. So, to get out on the field, to get your boots on the ground and the wheels rolling down the highway, or desert, as the case may be, we, of course, need an itinerary. We need a program. We need a plan. We've got to plan and prepare ahead of time, and this means writing to the people ahead of time, getting invitations, always having backups. Remember, one or two hosts is not enough because sometimes they fall through. You get there and a person's sick or they've had a funeral or there's some or another reason why your host who's organizing everything in that country just can't do it, isn't there, is sick or whatever. And so you always want backups, multiple contacts. In our mission, that's not difficult because we've got hordes of members of the Christian Action Network throughout the continent. We've got people who've written to us giving invitations for ministry. So much that, honestly, we could keep six teams busy all year round responding to all invitations. So our problem is not invitations and opportunities. Our problem is not enough funds, not enough field workers, not enough vehicles. But you want a good, packed, productive itinerary. When I go on a field outreach, I will have at least 30, if not up to 50 or 60 different contacts that I'm either delivering materials to, doing meetings for, seminars, services, school meetings, and so on. And so we've got everything packed and color-coded so that by the time we get back, we've delivered 2.5 tons or even 3 tons, which is maximum capacity when you talk about a four-wheel drive bucky and trailer and roof rack and all that of materials. And it's not unusual in a month-long mission for me to do something like 36 deliveries and have 78 meetings in 1 month, but that takes planning and preparation. And you can be sure if you miss out some poor soul who wanted you to come and you're in his area and he finds out you passed by and you didn't visit us and didn't let us know about the seminar down the road, I mean, that would be very bad. So you want to be sure that you've advertised, you've communicated with all your contacts. So if you're close to someone, and close might be just 100 and something kilometers away, they would want to know about what's theirs. They will get there, and they will be part of your conferences, seminars, camps, and so on. Then there's finances. Of course, we need fuel, we need finances, and there are expenses. Are there expenses? It used to be a lot easier. I mean, just to give you an idea, the first time I tried to cross the Zambezi River at Shesheki Ferry, the man said to me, that'll be 50 rand for the ferry. 50 rand? I mean, that's an enormous amount of money. I said, I'll need a receipt. He said, 20 rand without a receipt. So, plainly, he was overcharging, and then you get discounts if you don't need a receipt, because obviously they're not going to report it all. Anyway, it just gave me insight as to how things work. Don't accept the first price you told. Many times it's because they think you're a foreigner and they're for easy. So often they say, listen, I'm an African. I'm born, bred in Africa. I've traveled there many times. Don't give me foreign prices. Oh, sorry. And suddenly the price goes down to 10% of what he first quoted. Don't be surprised. And the fact that the Japanese man is happy to fork out whatever they say, I made 10 times what it's worth in one day's sales to some gullible foreigner, and this is considered acceptable. So, again, if you've got to buy food for a conference that you're doing, don't you go down to the marketplace. The price will just get a zero added to it. You get a local to do it, he'll get the right price, and so on. But finances. Family, friends, congregation, write prayer letters, write newsletters, get people praying and excited about what's going, and hopefully others will share in providing it. But God's work done God's way will not lack God's supply. Film equipment. Especially for people who are not very experienced in preaching, the one way you can make up for that is by showing a film. And you may not know the language of the people there. So, for example, I've never mastered Arabic, learned some Arabic words, but when I went to the Nubian Mountains, I took the Jesus form in Arabic. When I went to Mozambique, I took the Jesus form in Portuguese and Shangon and so on. And so when we go in there, you can give a 2-hour kerygma, core of the gospel message on the life and teachings, death, resurrection, and ascension of Christ, with which has been carefully translated. Not just somebody who's doing translation on the hop as he's speaking it. This will be far more accurate with visuals. And so going and using film evangelism, I've gone to many a place first time when I knew no context. And all I did was put up my screen, or in some cases found a nice big white wall and projector, cranked up the generator, showed the film, and next thing you've got hundreds, if not thousands of people attending. And from there, you are able to find context, and then people come to you. I want you to come and preach in my church, and you must come to our school, and you stay in our home. And so film evangelism often has been a way that we've gotten known in a community, or we've gotten started. And it can kickstart an outreach in any area. So we'd do literature distribution during day, invite the people to film showing in the evening, show the film in the evening, and after that, the rest of your schedule's full. Because the people, I want you to show this at my school, I want you to come to the next village. And before you know it, you've got an ongoing ministry. So film evangelism also enables you to redeem the night hours and to be able to do ministry in the evening when you normally couldn't as well. And it'll pack your days with invitations as well as a result. Then material to distribute. In the early days, my first mission to Mozambique, I felt excited about being able to take in 2 packs of World Missionary Press gospel booklets and 100 New Testaments on a box in the back of my motorbike, and I thought that was just a stupendous achievement. Well, since then we've moved hundreds of tons, but the literature that we want to distribute in the field needs to be selected. You need to consider what languages they need. We get things, whether it's from All Nations Gospel Publishers, Scripture Gift Mission, the Bibles that we need, the tracts, the evangelistic resources. We're going there to bless the people. And when we go home, the literature stays. The film equipment stays. So what are we going to be distributing? You want to be sure that you've got your distribution material ready, whether it's textbooks for the teachers, whether it is Bibles, Bible teaching materials, libraries for pastors, hymn books, and of course the Word of God, and posters like the Broadway Narrowway, material in French. These are pictures taken in the Congo and in Sudan, and libraries for pastors, equipping the people with what they need. Study Bibles are always greatly appreciated. And so, what distribution materials do you need? Make a plan, be prepared, pre-position the materials. Here we had a Bible college consultation, about 80 different principals and lectures from 20-odd different Bible colleges, and we had boxes prepared for each of them. This was what was in each one of the boxes. That takes preparation. That takes planning. Book tables at conferences, material you're going to drop off to different evangelists and teachers. And then there's your personal gear. And don't forget the cat, because there might be rats over there, and it's always useful to have your personal rat catcher with you. No, we wouldn't normally take cats to the field, but I do take cat food to the field, because we always find some stray cats, and so we're able to give them some whiskers and make happy cats. There's your field gear, things that you're going to need. All sorts of equipment. Anticipate getting injured. Water and food, and amongst that, water purification equipment. My water purifying pump, ceramic filter, super important, helps you to live longer, be healthier, and minister longer.